We are taking a whirlwind chemistry of beer class here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Beer makers in Duluth Superior are very firm on this. The water from the cold depths of Lake Superior is the best for brewing beer. But then there's the malt and hops and that tricky, tricky yeast. Have you tried making beer in your basement, garage, or kitchen? How did it go? What lessons did you learn that you could share with others? We're at 800-642-1234. Aileen Beard is a chemistry professor at the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth, where she's taught a class about the chemistry of making beer. And she joins us from our studios in Superior this morning. Aileen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So when our show visited Superior last month, we heard that Lake Superior's water is ideal for brewing beer. Can you refresh our memory a little? What is going on with the water in Lake Superior?
Well, you know, the beauty of Lake Superior is that there's not a lot in the water. Beer is 95% water, so If there's a lot of things in the water to start with, you have to remove it to before you can start making beer. And so, we sort of describe it as a clean slate. It allows you to put in whatever you want into the water that'll affect the flavor of beer, and you don't have to remove it. So that's ultimately the reason. It's fairly soft. There's not a lot of calcium, magnesium, and that kind of stuff in it.
And that probably also makes it easier for brewers, less expensive, since you don't have to remove the minerals through filtration or reverse osmosis.
Absolutely.
So would brewers ever want to add those minerals back into the mix? Do calcium, sodium, or magnesium help you get certain flavors in the end?
They absolutely do. Being able to control the exact amount makes it a little bit easier for quality control and those kinds of things. So yeah, absolutely. We typically add calcium, sometimes sodium, sometimes magnesium into the beer.
And what does that do to the beer's taste?
It does a few things. You know, in terms of chemistry, it lowers the pH, and so that can alter how you perceive some of the other flavors. So it makes it a little bit less acidic, so to speak. And the other thing that it does is it can kind of, it's what we call, you know, make it fuller, sweeter sometimes, maybe a little bit more mellow. And some of these, you know, experiential kind of flavors, they're hard to describe until you kind of have to feel them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, after water, the 95% part, the three other ingredients are the malt and the hops and the yeast. So let's start with malt. What exactly is malt, and how can brewers use it to change the flavor they're trying to achieve?
Well, malt provides the basis for beer. It's what provides all of the sugars for the yeast to metabolize and make ethanol. Almost all beers use a malted grain of some sort. Malt simply means the grain has been germinated. Mm-hmm. So that gets the enzymes working that we want to convert starches into sugars that can then be converted into alcohol.
And then how it's roasted has an impact as well.
Absolutely. The darkness, it'll affect the color of your beer. It also affects the flavor. When you roast the malt, it goes through a caramelizing process similar to what you do when you make caramel from sugar. And so that changes the flavors that you're going to extract out of the malt.
We are getting a chemistry lesson involving beer with Aileen Beard. She is a chemistry professor at the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth, where she's taught a class about the chemistry of beer making. What questions do you have about making beer? What do you want to know about boiling hops and working with yeast or finding the best tasting water? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So let's move on to the hops. There seems to be a lot of variety out there that brewers can use. Can you walk us through basically the landscape a little bit?
Oh, wow. there are so many different varieties of hops right now. The hops provide a couple of different things. They provide a lot of what most people would describe as flavor, not just taste. So what we can taste out of the hops is the bitterness parts of them, the isoalpha acids that produce some of the bitter flavors. But they also produce a lot of aromas, the things you associate with, like fruity tastes, fruity flavors, those kinds of things. Those are all aromas, and so depending upon when you add the hops, what kind of profile the hops have, will define what your beer tastes like.
So how can boiling your hops then at different temperatures change the taste, the aroma, whatever you end up with there?
Well, I mean, when you boil, it's all going to be at the same temperature because boiling water is going to be at 100 degrees Celsius or 212 Fahrenheit. But it has more to do with how long you boil them.
Okay.
And when you put the hops in. If you put the hops in early, those are likely to drive off all of those low-boiling compounds that are going to produce a lot of your aromas. So what you're going to get left with is the bitterness parts of the hops, the bitterness chemicals. And so if you add hops later in the process, so they're only boiled for, say, 2 or 3 minutes, that will pull out a lot of those low-boiling, aroma-causing compounds that will really add a lot more flavor to your beer.
And then there is a yeast, which has a personality all of its own. Some brewers grow their own cultures and use the same strains over and over again. Can you help us get a handle on this yeast process?
it's a pretty complex, ultimately, what these little molecules do in metabolizing to produce ethanol. Yeast are similar to, you know, we use generally one major type of yeast in brewing beer, but yeast is kind of like people. So there's a lot of different varieties, even though we're all human. we have very different qualities, and yeast is that way as well. And so in addition to producing ethanol, they also produce a lot of other byproducts, and those affect the flavor of the beer. Some yeasts are really identifiable. In Belgium, the yeast produce a lot of different types of esters and kind of fruity flavors to them that you can identify it almost immediately. Other yeasts are a little bit less identifiable, but if you want quality control and you want to produce the same beer every time, which most people do if they're going to sell the beer, then you've got to use the same ingredients, and that means the yeast cells have to be the same.
And that must be really difficult to replicate. How important is keeping out bacteria or yeast that actually exists in the air naturally?
Well, again, if you want quality control, you want the same flavors all the time. So you don't want other yeast from the air, from contamination from another source, because that'll produce different flavors. A lot of our wild yeast will produce some sour flavors. That's actually how we make sour beers. But if you don't want a sour beer, you don't want that contamination. It'll usually badly affect your beer. Bacteria is the same way. It's the bacteria that's in beer that may end up in your beer is not going to kill you. It's not going to. It's not toxic. Alcohol will kill those kinds of bacteria, but they can produce flavors that aren't necessarily good.
So, as a chemist, what's the most interesting part of the brewing process to you? What really speaks to you?
I love the whole process. I mean, it's about taking it start to finish. It's about, you know, adjusting every step to control the process, because if you change things just a little bit, if you go through the mashing process at a little bit different temperature, if you ferment your beer at a little bit different temperature, you get different beers, different tastes.
But is there creativity in the process? Do you see some room to experiment and be creative?
Yeah, and that's exactly why I like that. So as you control that, then you change it. You see what happens with the flavor. If it's a good thing, you do it again. If it's not a good thing, you don't do it again. I consider making beer really an art as much as it is a science. And I think most brewers would agree with that.
We are looking at the chemistry of brewing beer, and we have Aileen Beard as our trusted guide. She's a chemistry professor at the College of St. Scholastica, and she's taught a course on beer making there for a long time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you visited a brewery here in Wisconsin and learned about making beer? What about the process stuck with you? Would you recommend the experience to others? You can call in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to our chemistry lesson on beer in just a moment. It's Wisconsin Weekend on the Ideas Network. We're learning about the chemistry of brewing on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So get this, at the College of St. Scholastica, each student in chemistry professor Aileen Beard's class on beer making has had to taste test a sip of sun-skunked warm beer before they talked about exactly what went chemically wrong. And our eyes might glaze over, not from the beer, when trying to understand those alpha acids and what went wrong. Nevertheless, are you an amateur brewer or interested in becoming one? What questions do you have about getting started? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Aileen Beard stays with us. What is it like teaching college students about the chemistry of beer making?
Oh, it's a lot of fun, actually. It's fun to have students, you know, excited about learning chemistry. Giving them a topic that speaks to them, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, it's accessible, huh?
That's right. My favorite description or comment from a student was that this course has ruined beer drinking for me. I took that as a pretty cool comment, because what they meant by that was instead of just drinking to drink, they started drinking and evaluating as they were drinking a beer. So they were drinking slower. They were stopping to kind of think about what they were experiencing instead of just trying to see how much they could drink. And from a college, you know, when you teach at a college, that's a pretty important factor.
Yeah, and the students produce their own beer in the class. Is that right?
They do. Every student actually leaves with a 12-pack of beer.
And they're 21 when they enter this class.
Correct. We do taste testing, so they have to be.
Fred from Oconomowoc called in to ask, what do you know about dry hopping? How does that affect the flavors?
You know, dry hopping is going to what happens is you extract some of the acids from the beer, but they do not get converted into the isoalpha acids, which makes often a little bit more bitterness to the beer. You know, the alcohol, once there's alcohol in there, it's going to extract a little bit more of those chemicals. But they're going to be sort of in their unchanged state, so to speak. And so it affects it a little bit differently. You do get a lot more bitterness. You also will get some of the more volatile compounds, the low boiling compounds, essential oils that help bring in the aromas into the beer. Mm.
When people make bad tasting beers, where do they get tripped up in the process?
Almost always, it's in how clean they are, how careful they are about sterilizing their equipment.
Huh, and that's just a basic lab 101 thing.
Absolutely.
I know when we were at Superior, the Earthrider Brewery in Superior last month, the equipment seemed to be all stainless steel, and it was so clean in there. There wasn't a speck of dust. Is there something to that?
I mean, stainless is a standard equipment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that critical that it has to be stainless, but it can't be something that might react with the chemicals in the beer. And so stainless happens to be easy to clean, so that makes life a little bit easier. And it's fairly unreactive. So you wouldn't want to take an aluminum pan, for example. Because that'll oxidize as in the process and bring in some of the aluminum metal ions into your beer, which you probably wouldn't want. But certainly the cleanliness, it matters. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that some beers, some of the sour beers in Belgium, actually take pride in not being clean.
Well, Aileen, this has been so much fun. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Aileen Beard is a professor of chemistry at the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth, where she's taught a class about the chemistry of making beer, and she joined us from our Superior studios this morning. Let's pick up now with our WPR series on alcohol called High Tolerance. Here's Wisconsin Life producer Maureen McCollum with a profile of a craft brewer in our state and the international organization that helps her get a toehold in the industry.
Amanda is a brewer at Wanakee's Octopi Brewing. While she's a young, tenacious woman, she describes her brewing and drinking style as being very much the opposite.
I kind of tell people that my brewing style is very much like a 40-year-old man who just discovered craft beer in the 90s. And when I say that to brewers, they kind of understand where I'm coming from. I like old school hops. I like a malty backbone. I like clarity.
WPR's Jenny Peek visited Deanda at Octopi Brewing to learn more about how she got into the craft and what it's like to be a female in a male-dominated industry.
The world of craft beer opened up for Erica Deanda 4 years ago during a tasting class at a high-end brew pub in Oakland, California. A recent hire, the owners had Deanda and her coworkers taste a variety of brews so they could aptly describe them to their customers.
I knew nothing about beer at that point except for I did not like it at all. You know, it was disgusting. Give me a pink drink. I don't want beer. One of our first, like, training days, they had us trying some, you know, like really fancy bottles. And I remember trying a beer and I just remember it had like this oaky kind of tart. It almost reminded me of like a Chardonnay. And I just was in awe that this was beer. It wasn't bitter, it wasn't harsh, it was kind of like sweet and just had all these different characteristics. Then I'm like, I need to know more.
After 4 years of completely immersing herself in the world of brewing, Deanda, now 28, is a brewer at Octopi Brewing in Wanakee and the chapter president of Wisconsin's Pink Boot Society, an international nonprofit that supports women working in the brewing profession. Well, it was a quiet day at Octopi when I went to meet Deanda. She had a lot to say about how being a part of the society has helped her make connections and get inspiration along the way.
It's important to feel like you're connected to people who kind of are, you know, similar to you. And I think for me, it's also been a big inspiration to meet other women who work in this industry, and not only work, but are dominating this industry, especially when it's, you know, kind of a boys' club, so to speak. For me, it's always been the inspiration. I got into brewing. I was really confused as to where I was going with my life. When I found the Pink Boot Society, it was very much like I was working in a tap room. I went to my first collaboration brew day where I met a couple of women brewers out in California. And just seeing what they were accomplishing and seeing how dedicated they were to their job, it was like, I want to do that and I can do that.
Beyond creating a platform for women in the beer industry, Deanda says the Pink Boot Society and the rise in women brewers is transforming beer culture.
I also think with the Me Too movement, sexual harassment in the brew house is kind of becoming like a big prominent issue. I've been reading a lot of stories about brewers who have harassed bartenders and things like that. And like I said, the guys who I work with are all supportive. And so I think that, you know, we can all kind of come together and be a driving force. But I think women can be a powerhouse to kind of knock some of these things that have been disregarded for so long. There's a misconception that we're like all these like feminists and we don't want boys in the club and things like that. We do. We want allies. We want people supporting us. We're just trying to encourage other people and to push anybody into the beer industry and advance women's careers as much as we possibly can.
For up-and-coming women brewers, Deanda says to never stop trying.
I always like to say, when someone shuts a door in your face, just go through the window. Don't let anybody tell you no, you can't do it. Also, don't stand in your own way. It just takes a lot of hard work and dedication. This isn't something that just happens overnight. But if you really dedicate your time to it, you can be a force to be reckoned with in the beer industry, I think.
Why can't women have a good beer drinking song?
That story came to us from WPR's Jenny Peek. It's part of WPR's project High Tolerance, a deep dive into Wisconsin's relationship with alcohol. To hear all the stories, go to WPR.org/alcohol. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And if you have an idea for Wisconsin Weekend that could reach all corners of our state, send us an email to mornings@WPR.org and we'll explore your idea for an upcoming Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.